The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
It's Purim this week. Joyous times to be had by all, especially as it comes at the very end of 2 years of a pandemic. And you know what? No fancy pants introductions needed for this one. We wanted to have a good time, so we brought back comedian Ellie Leibowitz to shoot the breeze on the Jewish comedy scene. We hope you enjoy. Yeah. Ellie Leibowitz, welcome back to the show. Very, very honored to have you as a repeat guest.
Thank you. Good to be here. Always fun to talk.
Well, we're recording right now for our Purim episode. What better way to get into Purim than with a little bit of comedy? I wanted to get your overall thoughts on Purim. My thinking for you is that, like, Purim is that time that everybody thinks they're a comedian. They do their spiels and they do a funny video and they have their themes for Purim. So what is a comedian's thought about the time of year that everybody thinks they're a comedian?
Well, I think it's okay. Like, I'm all for people being more laid back and fun, especially Jews who are just, like, very serious. I think I wrote something recently how, you know, during Adar, everybody's like okay to have fun, and, you know, the rabbi wear a blue shirt and go crazy. And I think that's okay. I think when it's not Adar and you make a joke, people always try to, like, tell you, and it's like, you know, it's inappropriate because, you know, it's Tu B'Shvat or some, they tie in some random Jewish calendar moment that's coming up. Again, a possible album title will be called During Elul, No Less. So, you know, all the time people are trying to, I think Jews and Orthodox Jews specifically are very, very serious all the time. And maybe I'm just talking about Litvox, I don't know, but we were just very serious all the time, and I think it wouldn't hurt anybody if we had, like, again, I think it's on purpose to have a second Adar. I think there's a reason for that. So I don't mind that, and especially, like, in my years in yeshiva, when everyone was just like, hey, how great is everything, and, like, in from a serious standpoint, and then Purim was nice because people were just, like, letting, you know, just letting their hair down and being more calm. I think they should have more Purim. So 8 days of Purim would be another comedy album.
That would be a very interesting.
But that makes me sound like an alcoholic. So
first of all, I've already told you your album needs to be entitled Glila Build. That has to be the title of your album.
No, it's going to be called Remind Me After Shabbos.
Fine.
that title tells you exactly where I'm at, yeah. Where, and it comes from me going to my wife and being like, hey, I thought it was a great joke at our meal, or, you know, over Shabbos, remind me after. And then after Shabbos, she'll say, I was supposed to remind you of something.
my thought around Purim was always that the same type of thing where, like, that's our one day to let loose. Like, we're so uptight the entire year. So we have all of this energy bubbling up, and then that one day it goes crazy. If you go into yeshiva, that happens, and it doesn't really work the same way in reverse with Tisha B'Av. We have that one very sad day of year, but that doesn't prevent us from being very, very sad and downtrodden the rest of the year. I don't know why it doesn't work both ways.
Well, I feel like Purim, yeah, Purim is a little bit like the Jewish Rumspringer for I guess, but I don't know. I feel like, yeah, it's something Jews tend to lean to be sad or guilt-ridden. There's guilt-ridden, there's, hey, like, I saw this something on Twitter a few months ago. I think the Women's March posted something about around Thanksgiving, and they said, we're so sorry that our donations were asking for donations of $14.92. We know how insensitive that is to Native Americans or something. And I was like, imagine if this organization did not realize how anti-Semitic they were and were apologizing for this stupid thing. Like, but also, imagine if every Jew was offended by every year because every year something bad has happened to us. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't do 1492, 1493. There was this pogrom, this thing. So, yeah, I think there's a reason Jews are just like, oh man, the world is just really heavy. I mean, but that is also why we have a sense of humor, I think, because
I'm sorry that we're counting years from the time of the Christian God being born as opposed to the from the creation of the world at this point. Like the year is, if you ever wanted to know, I remember, I forget which comedian was, I apologize, it's Louis C.K. He said, if you ever want to know which religion won, what year are we in? Is that Louis C.K.?
Yeah, because his name of the special is 2017. And there he's like, saying it's the year 2017. Christianity clearly won. He's like, Jews are like, it's 5,000. He's like, ah, shut up, whatever.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Since we've had you on, you have proven that you are not a flash in the pan. You didn't just die out, fizzle out after, you know, the one or two years of success. You've been able to parlay this into a fairly successful ongoing comedic career. So I want to know, what have you, so we had you on in 2019 and since
10 years ago, 10 years ago,
10 years ago in 2019
in COVID years.
I want to know, okay, we'll get to COVID a little bit later, but as a comedian, what have you picked up in the last 3 years since we've had you on? Not COVID. Let's leave that. We're going to get that to there in a little bit. You picked it up. I know. I picked it up twice.
Six more jokes. I came up with six more jokes over the
last. All right. Talk to me. What has come up?
Well, I like your thinking. Like, you weren't just popular for a year and fizzled out. You were at least there for at least 2.5 years. So you've really, really lasted in the time. I don't know. I've been able to really come into my own a little bit more in terms of, you know, I think Twitter has become more of a thing. There's like the quote unquote from Twitter, you know, verse, I would call it, where people are just making these jokes about things that I'm like, oh, only I'm going to understand this, right? And then little do you know that, like, oh, by the way, there's a bunch of people who are like on Twitter that are like, oh, I love these types of jokes. So I've kind of developed a little bit of that. Instagram became more of a thing. I'm not as much on TikTok as I should be, but I've been able to really, you know, perform a bunch more for, you know, still leaning hard on, you know, probably Orthodox audiences, but really kind of expanding to, you know, a little bit more broadly within the Jewish world. I did a number of shows over COVID that were, I did probably 100 Zoom shows over COVID, and only two of them were terrible, which is a pretty good, you know, a show is bad when you get kicked out of the Zoom. As I gotta say, there's bombing as a comedian, and then there's bombing so hard that you get removed from the Zoom. And I don't know if you've ever tried to join a Zoom that you've been kicked out of, but it says you've been removed from the Zoom, which is just horrible for your self-confidence. But thank God that was the minority, and I did, again, I probably about 100 shows, and most of them I couldn't hear anybody, but I assume they went great.
Talk to me about that. Is it different not getting that immediate feedback? Usually performers, people who are used to doing their job in front of an audience, I'm assuming athletes had to do this when they had to go into like the bubble. It's a little bit different. They still got the gratification of, let's say, the ball going into the hoop. But with you, your gratification comes from when you hear that feedback. When you're not doing that, when you don't have the laughter coming in front of you, like, how do you know if you're doing well? How do you know if people are enjoying themselves? I'm assuming everybody is on mute. Maybe you can see their face going like laughing, but they don't hear it. How is that different for you?
So thankfully, yeah, as I say, athletes always can tell. Yeah, when you score a basket or whatever, it's like, okay, there's an objective thing there. I mean, hopefully I've done it at this point where comedy is like, okay, I've done it enough that I know if this joke doesn't get a laugh, then it's on you and not me. But I actually was able to, you know, figure out that the best way to do it was to have about 5 or 6 people unmuted at the beginning, and then everybody else was muted. And that way it kind of was the best of both worlds, because I was able to hear I would ask like in advance, you know, which people are the good like Shabbos table, you know, the people that are like good Shabbos table audiences. This is the closest thing I've had to a Shabbos meal in 3 years, by the way. So, but you know, so those types of, so you have 6 people unmuted or so, and then you have everyone else muted, and hopefully they have their cameras on. Some Jewish audiences would be like, no, we're not doing that.
And but have your camera off too.
I would have my camera off too. It would make it very difficult. But yeah, it was challenging. I mean, one of the main, you know, jokes I say now that I'm doing live shows again is that I said that I'm not taking this for granted. The fact that I'm not staring at a bunch of old ladies' nostrils who don't know how to use a webcam is a pretty incredible thing. Because again, it was 2 years of just Howard, has the comedian started yet? You're not wearing pants. And so you would literally, like, you know, have, again, there were sometimes also people wouldn't be, first of all, you'd have designated laughers. So, like, I say laughers, I mean, there's 5-6 people who are unmuted who understood that, like, hey, you have a good sense of humor, you're a laugher. And then sometimes those people wouldn't really laugh. And I would just be like, I would be able to call them out, be like, you guys are doing a great job. And, but like, there's a reason a comedy album, you know, has an audience, has a live audience.
There's a reason sitcoms have laugh tracks or live audiences.
Not even that, just right. You just need the feedback of, like, you can tell something's funny, but it's just, there's something about the human psychology that I would say that, like, there are times it was challenging because if people were, sometimes people would be muted completely, everybody. And that was really hard. And you would, I said, you wouldn't see any response. Really, you wouldn't get any feedback. The only time you get a response was somebody emails you afterwards that they were upset. And I told my rabbi, he's like, now you know how I feel. So, you know, it took some getting used to, but thank God I was able to do it. Cause I was, you know, performing all the time, especially March of April, May, when it was really, really needed for people. And from a cathartic standpoint, I think people were, you know, everybody just like, well, I'm here with my kid for 3 months going insane. Also, Pesach is at home, which is not isn't a thing I was prepared for. Do you have any jokes for me? And I was just like, all right. And I was able to do it. And I also, you know, one of the things, nice things was that everybody was going through that same experience, kind of, you know, everybody was going through the kind of the fear, the unknown, the rules, the everything is scary. So to be able to really just like alleviate some of that tension, I think it was really, really helpful, especially for, you know, some audiences, let's say like old, especially at the beginning of like 2020, you know, before, let's say pre-vaccine, the audiences were very, very, you know, I would say older people often because they weren't really leaving. And I would make this joke. I would say, like, you know, I make a joke about the Art Scroll Machzor on Yom Kippur. And I say, if you say, here's the Birnbaum, I really hope you've gotten the vaccine and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, but it was as hard as it was, I was really glad because it was really able to keep me fresh. If I didn't perform, I know there were comedians out there who were like, I haven't performed for 2 years. And I'd be like, how do you even, you know, do that? So it got me writing consistently, got me performing consistently, and also, you know, keeping up, my, Parnassa a little bit.
Yeah. So you mentioned Twitter before. I want to go back to that a second. One of the big exciting things that happened on Twitter was this rise of the Vada Bad Chanim, which I know you're heavily part of. I don't know if that's supposed to be a secret who's part of that, but I happen to some people are out there. It's probably pretty obvious to see who's retweeting it. The people who retweet it right away kind of know.
It's like when Kevin Durant would like fight people on Twitter under a pseudonym, and then
back when Kevin Durant was the bad guy, was the heel, if you will. I don't know if you're a wrestling fan. Sorry.
Okay.
So I wanted you to talk a little bit about the Vada Bad Chanim and their role in Frum Twitter, and specifically the Frum tweet of the year that everybody seems to look forward to, starting like at in the middle of November for some reason.
Everyone that looks forward to, all three of us.
Wait. I want to tell you something. I don't know who started it, but somebody for one of you guys opened up a thing like at the end of November, one of those live the Twitter live things where they said we're going to announce the brackets. Yeah. But you had like 50 people tuning in, and it was just basically a loop of Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha by Yeshiva Boys Choir.
So bored.
And I was wondering how many people were gonna, like, how long would people last on that thing? And so don't think that just three of you. There are people that are interested.
Well, that's the interesting thing about, I guess, because even before Twitter, you talk to people in their 20s and they're like, I was like, oh, I used to make jokes on Facebook. They're like, Facebook, how old are you? I was like, do you see how little hair I have? So you don't know. The truth is, you really don't know the impact of your online audience. Here's the art school version of the from. You don't know what kind of thing you can do. You one person, you can change whatever.
You need to work on your nusach for that.
Yeah, I got nothing. Yeah. But so the Vada Bad Chanim, it's me and I don't know, a group of guys. I think there used to be, you know, women a part of it. as well, just because somebody's going to write letters or send faxes or carrier pigeons at this point. But where we'd just be like, hey, here are, like, you know, collaboration. I think it was, we became more, you know, popular over COVID, and everyone's just like, you know, everyone's like, oh, I'm so sick of these jokes about the same things and every, like, because there's nothing worse. Back to, I guess, your original question about Adar and Purim is that it's a little bit tough because some people are like, there's such a low hanging fruit of jokes, and you're like, oh, you can go for this joke. And it's like, yeah, everyone's like, I'm sorry, but your Putin Purim joke, everyone is doing a Putin Purim joke, which I'm not, but I just feel like, you know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that, like, okay, like, I heard a comedian say, he's like, you know, as a comedian, it's like, there's the first level of like what everyone thinks of, and then there's second level is what comedians think of, and then there's third level is trying to be as original as possible. So that's the thing, is sometimes I'm just like, I gotta go for the original joke. So thought about comedy, it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like a bunch of different Jewish from jokes and from, you know, topics as like, I guess, a committee. I don't know. I even know. I guess that's what a VOD is.
That's right. It's a group of people that are trying to accomplish. A VOD is generally, they're trying to accomplish some sort of kashrus or Torah goals, and you guys are trying to, you know, make fun of stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, there is, you know, there is some, again, I think there is, especially given the last couple of years it's been in the current state of the world right now, I don't think it's not the worst idea to have a little bit more levity in the world, because otherwise it's a little sad or scary. So I would say that's not a bad thing. But so the from tweet of the year is, yeah, you know, it's like a March Madness type of bracket where people nominate, hey, these are the best, you know, from tweets, and everybody can nominate stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's cool to see that there's like a bigger audience of these jokes. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not the only one who like played Kent on a Shabbos. And yeah, people actually understood.
That was every bar mitzvah that I ever went to.
Well, yeah, I feel like you have that. Or like, what did you do during a long Shabbos?
Yeah.
When it was like cold, or I don't know,
really hot, and you didn't want to stay outside the whole time.
Yeah, I don't know. People are like, yeah, are you playing cards? Quit president or whatever, and you played Kent.
Yeah, that was the tweet. I don't know if that was, so I don't know how you decided if it goes to the VOD about Chanukah, if it goes to your specific handle, but like, I think that was your tweet with was it a Knesset meeting?
It was I think it was when, before, I guess, the coalition, it was like Yair Lapid and Benny Gantz or something, and Netanyahu and Shaked. I forgot who was talking. It was like a group of two people talking, two people in separate, like, you know, standing apart from each other. Two people were talking to each other, and next to them was another two people talking to each other, like, you know, in their
own. The caption was something along the lines of,
all right, what do we do? What's the code when one of us has Kent?
That's right.
Yeah, it's a more visual joke, so it's not
very, yes,
I guess.
Exactly. I was shocked, by the way, for this year, because I thought the video of the Straight Out of Bubba Kama was going to run away with that. That was one of the greatest tweets I've ever seen, like, in any context. But the cow goring, the shore goring the guy on the motorcycle was one of, and the caption was Straight Out of Bubba Kama. And if you haven't seen that tweet, man, it is so perfectly named. I think it was from Israel also.
I think it's like some random
sign. I thought I saw Hebrew signs in the back. That's why I thought so.
I don't know. There's a lot.
I'm shocked. I think
we just assume the thing with Hebrew lettering is kosher. We just assume that random lettering is Hebrew. No, but there was also the one with the water slide. Like, no, it's,
yeah,
like,
oh, I know.
Is that the winner?
Yeah, I think that one won.
The water slide.
I think it beat out the
water park, and the lifeguard said, "Oh, what are all these kids doing? They're saying this bracha after the water slide." And there's like, "Oh, we got to teach him Asher Yatzar." Yeah. I was like, "Oh, that's pretty good." I think it's cool to see that. Like, I think what's nice about this whole from Twitter thing is that people have started, you know, there just seems to be like almost like an open forum of different jokes about different topics, of that, you know, you take a caption. I mean, that's, I think Dov Bashefkin was probably the first person who I started like noticing doing this, of like, you know, taking a caption and like kind of taking a picture and then repurposing it with like a from thing. That's and those are always like fun to do if you can come up with an original take. Like, I had one with who's the guy in Dallas on the Mavericks, the Luka Doncic. Yeah, there you go. See, I can't. Yeah, so, you know, there was a thing of like Dirk Nowitzki going like you know, putting his hands down. And I'm like, yummy, my mouth. Stuff like that. Again, visual medium. You guys won't know what the heck I'm talking about, but yeah.
I want to go back to COVID because I can't let it go.
Neither can anyone else.
Yeah. I like
neither
everybody
can,
else.
Neither can half of the United States.
I'm very much looking forward to a day when we could say, remember COVID?
That was crazy. Guys. Yeah.
My kids don't remember a before COVID.
That's so sad.
It's crazy. I'm sure your kids are the same way.
My 1.5-year-old was putting a mask on a Mickey Mouse doll. And I said, this is the cutest / saddest picture I've ever seen.
Exactly. But what have you been able to pull things out of COVID that are COVID specific that you related to Judaism in any way?
Relating them to Judaism. Yeah. I mean, when I was doing Zoom shows, you know, I had a whole bit about, I said, you know, I would come up with stuff, you know, tying it into Judaism a little bit and say like, you know, 40 is a really important number in Judaism. You know, Moshe was in Har Sinai for 40 days. The Jews were in the desert for 40 years. A free Zoom session shuts off every 40 minutes. So it's a really important number. That joke does not work live. and also, I don't know, I think also just like, again, the idea of teachers being able to like adapt to COVID and being able to do Zoom school when like, I don't know, I think of Jewish school and my Jewish school upbringing. I said, it's impressive that the teachers were able to figure out Zoom because the teachers I had growing up couldn't even figure out the video cart with the TV on it. So
I lost a job because of COVID. I lost a teaching job.
I lost many jobs because of COVID.
No, I lost it before. I lost jobs due to COVID before everybody was losing jobs due to COVID. This was ridiculous. I went to go back to my grad school, and this was February of 2020. I went back to my grad school and I said, hey, do you guys need a professor? Like an adjunct to teach some sort of, like any, and I was looking for like a little extra income. And they said, actually, here's what we need. If you can help do this, all of our teachers are much older, and our students that are coming in are looking for more online options, but our teachers aren't able to like handle the, like to grasp the online schooling and figure out how to teach things online. And they don't really, is that something you could do? I'm like, sure. So this was February of 2020 and they gave me the textbook and I have it sitting on my shelf right there. And they said, come up with a syllabus and get back to us. So for like 3 weeks, I'm sitting there putting together a syllabus, trying to contemplate. COVID happens. And I said, all right, here's my syllabus. Like, we don't need you anymore because all the teachers now are forced to do online. So now everybody learned how to do it.
And the school shut down. No,
it was crazy. Like they didn't all of a sudden didn't need me anymore. It was done. So it was like right away.
Well, I remember in February, let's say March 13th of 2020, I would say was when that was like the first, that was the Shabbos that after Purim that a lot of these shuls like shut down. And I said, how weird was that when your shul emails you not to come?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a weird role reversal. Yeah. But literally like the weirdest thing was like in February, like 14th, I was in St. Louis doing a show. Then I went on vacation to LA with my family. I did some shows in LA. On the next job is the next week I was in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Then I went to Stamford, Connecticut. And I did a couple shows in Baltimore around Purim and then back in Washington Heights. And then COVID happened or whatever, everything closed down. I was worried that I was spreading it everywhere. I kind of say this in jest, but I'm just saying like, I was really worried that, and then I ended up getting COVID like 2 weeks after that, incidentally. But so I didn't spread it, but I was like, oh man, I have been in every city in the United States right now. And it would have been bad.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question. I don't, the last time you were on, I don't think I asked you this, but you mentioned earlier about how you kind of self-censor and there's certain areas that are off limits to you. But are there jokes that you thought of like, and you'd think this would kill somewhere. I just don't know where I could say it.
You mean in terms of like if I think it's like too dirty or whatever?
Too dirty, making fun of the wrong thing, maybe like something that you don't touch.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are personal things that I think are like, okay, I think it's off limits, and I don't think it's so, again, I don't think making jokes about this Russia-Ukraine thing, unless it's like, I guess, making fun of Putin in a lambasting him kind of way type of thing, but also
has to be less obvious.
Less obvious, but also like not tasteless that like, hey, there's an active war going on and stuff like that. I think it's a little tough to do. I think there are times when I'm like, I think this is funny, but like, I don't know if this is gonna, you know, be appropriate. Like, you know, I don't know if it'll be cut, but I can mention my joke about how during COVID, I said how COVID was a little similar to like, you know, Taras Mishpacha, the just the restrictions of like, you know, with COVID, it's like, all right, today's, all right, you gotta get tested and all right. Seven days later, you got to get tested again. Like, wait, why? And like the rabbi's trying to be like, listen, I'm trying to be as lenient as possible. And you're like, what? And then if you take a PCR test, it's just like a pregnancy test. You're like, all right, what does this mean? And who do I have to tell? So, you know, but again, I started telling that joke, but you know, I told you that was when I really started that beginning of that joke, I was, you know, beginnings of thinking of that joke, I was like, is this too far? Because I'm sure, I mean, I think I told that joke and some people were like, well, it was good until he got into the, you know, because that's how
when you present that joke, you have a disclaimer, like at the end of it, like, all right, we got through the show so far.
It follows a joke about Sota. So I'm like, all right, guys, if that was okay with you, we're okay, right? Like, is the roof still here? Are we okay?
Are we still cool?
Yeah, and also like I think it's also very different. Like, I think the way I'm telling some of these jokes is just my perspective is so different. Like, I just feel like so many classic comedians are like, you know, religion is stupid, you know, Judaism is stupid or whatever. And the fact that I'm like, you know, I would say an active participant in Judaism, it sounds like a really weird way, but the fact that I'm like a, you know, observant person who davens, keeps Shabbos, keeps kosher, and like, I'm very proud of my Judaism most of the time, is the fact that I'm doing that from that perspective should hopefully like be able to like, hey, I can make a joke about this, guys, right? I'm not like pandering to you. I'm not like these like, you know, quote unquote, you get somebody who's like a Jewish comedian who is just like, hey, bagel, you know, cheap. And you're like, ugh, this is terrible. But again, people have their own sensitivities. Everybody's like, okay, no, you can't make a joke about Kiddush Levana. Like, that is very serious. Like, and you know, at a certain point, I'm just like, I don't know. I hope God has a sense of humor. I really do. But I think we really need it. Again, if I do believe that everybody has a certain, you know, role in their lives of what their abilities are, and seems to be, thank God that, you know, I was given a predisposition to enjoy The Simpsons and Seinfeld, which helped form my sense of humor, and whatever, and have that be one of my, I don't have other skills, so you know, maybe if you take this,
just so I'm clear, the guy who has an actual other job aside from being a comedian just said that he doesn't have any.
Okay, yeah, I can write, and I can edit, and I have a brain, isn't a skill. I'm just saying that, you know, this is one of the, this and vending at Cubs games at Wrigley Field for years are the only two things that I've really, really done long enough that I'm like, oh, I've really seen my own progress and growth. And yeah, so, but I'll limit myself. I'll sometimes project based on the audience's reaction. That's why Zoom stuff was hard, because I'll project, I'll be like, oh, you guys were offended because you were frum and this didn't, or this was too frum, you know, you were too frum for this, or this wasn't frum enough. And they're like, no, we just couldn't hear you. So sometimes that's tough, but.
I was at one of your shows where you mentioned like different things about Sfardim, and I was looking around, and I happened to know some people at the show. I'm like looking at the Sfardim cracking up, and some of the Ashkenazim, yeah, not sure if they're allowed to laugh or not.
Getting offended on behalf of the Sfardim.
It's exactly right.
Is the most It's like I'll make jokes about Chabad too, which are, you know, pretty pro Chabad. One of the jokes that has gone well, you know, with the COVID connection, I said that the beginning of March of 2020, beginning of COVID, everybody really became Chabad in a way, at least at the very beginning, in the sense that we really lost our sense of timing. We were drinking more. We weren't shaving. Everywhere we went was kind of terrifying, but kind of exciting. And every day I had to ask myself, did I put on tefillin today? So, but again, when I say that premise of like every, you know, Chabad, or I'm making jokes about Chabad, like Chabad people can handle it. They're the most, you know, I would say, you know, a laid back, you know, I guess sect of Judaism. I would say sect of Orthodoxy or sect of.
Oh, if you don't count Breslov, but yeah.
Yeah, in a different way, but I'm just saying Chabad guys have seen it all, and they're like, they have to deal with everybody off the street. Like, their opener is, are you Jewish? That's right. Their whole thing. And if you say yes, they're like, oh shoot, I know, now what do I do in terms of, so they can connect with everybody, and it's just everyone's their own neuroses to be like, oh man. Like, I also started saying, like, Chabad is really like, people treat Chabad the way they treat their parents. Like, they'll make jokes about them. They'll be like, they'll like complain about them and stuff like that. But then when they're in the middle of nowhere and they're desperate and they're like, I need food. Do you know anyone Jewish? I'm trapped in this place and I don't know anyone. It's a work in progress, that joke. But, yeah.
I asked you that question to lead into a question about somebody who became really popular, especially on TikTok, and that's Miriam Anzoven. I think that's how you pronounce it. She's the one who does a lot of videos about Dafyomi. She does a Daf review every day. She's come under pressure or fire, but a lot of people seem to love her. She amassed a tremendous following on various forms of social media. I wonder what you would think about her gimmick.
I mean, I think, listen, is she doing Dafyomi? I'm not doing Dafyomi, so one up on me. Is she teaching people Torah that probably wouldn't be learning Torah? Great. I post a joke about the Parsha or something like that, and somebody who isn't super observant likes that joke, and I'm like, hey, I made them think about Judaism and the Parsha for a second. Great. If the same thing I said, if you have a way, she clearly has an entertaining way to teach and to make videos and to do it. And like, yeah, she is like making jokes, which I don't think that's against what I stand for. But like, she's bringing the, I guess, the Gemara and to a very relatable level to an audience. I mean, I think Judaism is a very, very scary, traditional Judaism is so very worried about like, what do we do? It's going to turn slippery slope. And this is how you get to this, this point. I think there is a certain level of adaptability, like look at Torah Shebaal Peh had to be written down at some point. So I think if the worst thing that you have is a woman, God forbid, yeah, I'm kidding, but you know, teaching Torah over TikTok and like telling people what Dafyomi is, and okay, yes, sometimes she curses and stuff like that. Whether or not that's not my personal style of my own humor.
As you say, nobody would believe you anyway.
Nobody would believe me if I cursed. It would just feel very inauthentic. But like, she's getting an audience to be involved, and it's like, again, how many people were probably upset when like Shonstein was like, I'm gonna translate the Gemara into English
anytime we do something new? Yeah,
right. Everyone's just like, oh man, the Septuagint, they're like, we gotta enact a fast day, like, you know, yeah, something new. I think there's a certain level of like, you know, I always say getting with the times in some ways. I think, you know, the when rabbis would get all upset, like the asifas and these things that are against like smartphones, and I was like, my issue is that you already lost the battle. It's like, people have smartphones. I said, get ahead of something before it's popular. Get ahead, again, 3D printing or virtual reality, okay, before it becomes a thing. But like, I don't know, she's entertaining, and like, people, you know, seem to enjoy what she's doing, and like, I don't think she's being particularly like disrespectful. And I'm like, people are like, okay, you can't curse in that regard. But I also don't know if half the flack she's getting is because she's a woman doing it.
Right. I'll tell you the truth. So a couple of things. I when I do Dafyomi, I try to like predict which parts of the daf, because she can't, she doesn't go through the whole daf. She has a 2-minute video.
Right.
So I try to predict. All right.
If Yomi was 2.5 minutes, I would do it.
That's right. But I try to predict which sections, which parts of the daf she's going to be she's going to be doing, to the point where if she posted a video, I couldn't watch that video if I was behind in the daf. Like if I'm 3 blocks behind and she posts a video today, I'm like, I can't watch that video until I finish that daf, and then I have to go find it again. But that's what it was. And I found it kind of ruining my learning to an extent, because I was paying more attention to what she was going to do than I was to what I was supposed to be learning.
I'm pretty sure the amount of people that are sitting in shul on Yom Kippur and thinking of my last new joke.
Guilty.
Or any Yal V'Yavo, anytime somebody bangs Yal V'Yavo, and I'm like, I don't know. But again, people would say, oh, you can't make a joke about being, you know, taking Judaism less seriously. And I'm thinking to myself, if my hope one day is that I take it more seriously, and I'm still sorry about it, I'm not doing it on purpose, but I'm just saying human nature. A couple things about that, though. It's like when I would, you know, sometimes read the parsha and I'm like, oh, let me make a joke about it, and just from more like an anachronism, like a Mel Brooksian type of thing, to try to connect it to modern day. Which again, some people will be like, oh, you can't make a joke about that because it's the Torah. But I do think there's a certain level of like, almost like we need like, you know, like The Voice, the show where you don't see the person singing until they turn around. So almost like you need like a vacuum of like, hey, here is this thing. Are you okay if X person does this? X person does this. Is it a man? Is it a woman? Do you care? And then it's like, let's be honest. Are you, same thing with politics. I think politics is crazy. I hate that anti-Semitism has become this like on the left, it's like, oh, classic right-wing nationalists and their anti-Semitic rhetoric. And then they don't care that, like, you know, you're, I think Ilhan Omar's, who are like very, very, like, maybe possibly-ish anti-Semitic. And like, but like they, you, like everyone's biased to their own side. So again, take this thing. It's like, okay, is the, if a man was doing this, would you be upset by it?
Right.
And that's, I think that might be part of it. I don't know, but
there's another part that she's not, I don't think she's from. That was the other thing. Is that why you're upset about it?
For me, I'm not upset.
No, not you. Well, not you.
My people, in terms of like Shomer Shabbos or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But like, again, if it's somebody who's learning Daf Yomi, I'm like, I don't know, Peter Beinart, who is like very anti-Israel.
He's doing Daf Yomi. Daf
Yomi. I was like, I have a bigger problem with that. And then
that was the weirdest thing that I found.
Oh, the best one, he said it. He's like, tips for learning Daf Yomi, and rejected Feldheim titles, which is all a very good Twitter account, posted Peter Beinart, who's very, very anti-Zionist guy, posted saying like tips for learning Yavamos, and then rejected Feldheim titles wrote, learn the first Rashi and Bereshis, which is very, for those of you that don't, is basically like talking about how the Torah started with Bereshis to show you that God decided to give the land to the Jewish people. And there will be a time when people decide that the Jewish claim isn't valid to the land.
I don't know why Tips for Learning Daf Yomi by Peter Beinhart wasn't a rejected Feldheim title.
That it might be a good one. That you should say. That's a good one. That's a very good account to follow.
Yes, if you don't follow
again, it. But again, with humor, also in general, you're going to offend someone. Mike Birbiglia, one of my, I guess, inspirations, has a special called Thank God for Jokes, and he's like, jokes have to be about something. And again, I mean this that I think like. You know, people that get offended by certain topics, again, I don't think it's a certain taste, you know, it's tastefully or it's a too soon element, but like, you can't make a joke about, let's say, Russia and Ukraine and then get offended when somebody makes a joke about Israel and Palestinians. Like, right. I understand that's where your sensitivity is, but you have to be understand that people are sensitive in a way. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, but the fact that like, okay, so she's not a quote unquote observant, like, I don't know. Does that mean she can't teach? I mean, is it like, what's she doing it for? I don't know. Do we like, I guess like check everyone and say, what are you doing this for? How, you know, I'm rewatching The Good Place. So it's like, what are you, what are you doing it for? I don't know.
I want to ask you this, and it's based on an article that I wrote this week, the weirdest tradition in Judaism. I'll tell you what mine was. I literally wrote this, that the weirdest thing, that not like halacha, but like the weirdest thing we do in Judaism is refer to a person based on the book that he wrote, like the Chafetz Chaim. Yeah. And we call him the Chafetz Chaim, and yet he also wrote the Mishneh Berurah, which is like the way that we live our lives every day. Yeah. But maybe you could say the Chafetz Chaim is like,
it's like calling Steven Spielberg the AI.
Like, yeah, exactly. So, but like, who wrote the Mishneh Berurah? The Chafetz Chaim? No, the Chafetz Chaim didn't write the Mishneh Berurah. Like, that's not his name. And it would be like calling
You mean Jewish, like Jewish vernacular minhagim?
Yeah. Yeah, some weird things. Like, it would be like calling like Thomas Jefferson the Declaration of Independence. Like, that's who he is. He's the Declaration of Independence.
Right. People are like, well, it's like calling J.K. Rowling the Harry Potter, but...
Well, I want a different it has to be nonfiction.
Nonfiction.
Because we don't write... These are all like nonfiction. These are all halacha books. Like, right. Things like that. It would be like calling Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends and Influence People. Maybe it's because the title's too long.
That was how he introduced himself.
Hi, I'm the how to.
Hi, you know, I'm going to learn everything about you, and this is going to be, it's going to seem great, but it's really just salesy.
So, what do you think? What's your weirdest tradition?
What's my weirdest?
Because you like study this stuff. This is like your job, to find the weird things that we do and then nitpick on them.
Yeah,
I have to put you on the spot like this, but I'm doing it.
Well, yeah, I wish you would have prepped me for this one. Chicken over the head is interesting. What's something that we do as Jews? Right. I mean, Elon Gold has a whole bit about non-Jews. Calling people non-Jews is absurd when it's like, you're such a small minority. Non-Jews?
That's like the Mitch Hedberg corn and corn on the cob situation.
Right. You have to say the joke.
Oh, so that's always you call.
I like how you think people are just like, oh, you know, like when a rabbi does, like, oh, you know, the Medrash, like, do you know Rabbi Leibtag in Israel, Menachem Leibtag?
Yes.
He's like the Tanakh master and whatever. And the best thing that he does is when you go to a shir of his, he'll kind of quote parts of Tanakh and just be like, you know, it's Zechariah Perek Dalet, and everyone's like, there's a Zechariah now.
So the Mitch Hedberg corn on the cob.
Yeah, you gotta.
The Mitch Hedberg corn on the cob is like, it's weird. We call corn on the cob, and corn in the can is corn. Like, that would be like if you take my arm off and you call it Mitch, and then you put it back onto me and you call it Mitch altogether. Like, that's not how corn comes.
And then he's like, that's what I'm gonna name my CD.
And that's what I name on my special.
That's what he's gonna name his special. One of the things that we do. Well, I mean, people ask when it's like, do you perform for non-Jews? And I was like, yeah, but I also have like a tough time relating to non-Jews because, you know, Judaism is such a like consistent part of my life that it's just like, I'm like, do non-Jews even own a crock pot? Why would that happen? Like, do you play board games? I don't know. Like, even the Jewish vacation versus an Orthodox vacation versus a non-Jewish vacation, I would say. It's like non-Jews like go to like, oh, let's go to Spain, let's go to this place and just like eat all the food there. And Jews, vacation for Jews is just eating tuna somewhere else. You know? It's like, oh, I've never eaten deli in the Grand Canyon before. Wow. So something that we do that's weird. I mean, do you have other examples that you have in your article? You had the book one.
I spoke about like Kaparos, which is weird, which you spoke about, and Tashlich. Basically, the entire month of Tishrei is weird. Hoshanas
is one of those things when you whip Hoshanas on the ground.
So everybody talks about the whipping Hoshanas. My thing is the throwing the lulav on top of the aron, and then it sits there until Pesach. That's not the lulav. You throw the Hoshanas on top of the aron. I don't know if your shul does that. That was super weird. Like,
I mean, it's not that much weirder than buying a willow branch a minute ago for $5 just to whip it on the ground and make the janitor hate you. But so that's the part where you were like, you know, really, you're like, oh, that's the thing that's really gonna be fun.
I don't know, the having a kiddush after davening and then going home to eat lunch. That's
just background of Judaism of just being hearing stories for years of like they had to ration potato skins and like what, you know, what our ancestors went through and just like all these stories. So like, yeah, when you're elbowing that lady out of the way for that last mini hot dog, you're thinking to yourself, this might be my last meal for a while. So, you know, that's just survival of the fittest type of thing. It's ironic that there's such a Jewish thing with Darwinism and evolution, because I feel like the old Jewish attitude is survival of the fittest, not the fittest, but like survival in a way. Like Judaism is very much the almost the evolutionary idea of that. But that's going to get me canceled.
It's been nice knowing you, Ellie. I hope you enjoyed your time being able.
It's kind of like that's the thing that gets you canceled. It's like it's kind of like when you have like the level of like Averos, and it's like you're not supposed to talk, you know, during Chazaras Hashas, and it's like you got up there and it's like, you know, you talk during Chazaras Hashas. I was like, that's it. I was like, that's what I got. You know, it's so one of the things I say is that Judaism's like chinuch system, or at least growing up, that sometimes it's like so fire and brimstone-y that it's like, this is the worst thing you could ever do. And it's like, I just imagine, I said, this is, you know, what's the line? Yeah, there's a lot, you know, probably people standing in a line in Gehenna, like, you know, and they're like, hey, what are you in for? Oh, I murdered 6 people. What about you? I took my tits off while playing at basketball camp. Really? That's equal? Yeah, it's a really weird scale. And so we don't know. I think, what's the weirdest thing in Judaism that we do? I don't know. I think it is very funny that in a lot of Orthodox circles that there is this separation of men and women. And then like I say this with like masks, like mask guidelines, like, oh, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, don't wear a mask. And you're like, come on, I can't adapt this quickly. It's like my really frum yeshiva day school growing up was like, don't talk to girls. And one day they're like, why aren't you married? You're like, they're like, what? You're like, yeah, we meant to talk to them eventually, but like they never tell you when you're supposed to do that. You got all these like girls who like who graduate from like high school or like seminary, and they're like engaged a minute later, and they're like somehow they never talk to a boy, and you're like, so that's
definitely find the time.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we do is in practice. I think it's, I mean, we eat a lot, but that's just because we're like everything else is usser. that's part of it. This was a joke that I think I said Judaism, Jews are so obsessed with food that the first thing we make when panic happens, they make a huge statue of a cow. But again, like, I'm sure there are people that are like, yeah, very serious thing. I was like, I know, and I've lived with it. You know, that's, I bet half of Judaism's guilt for generations is, you know, your ancestors did the Egel HaZahav. I was like, I'm from Sheva Levi. I don't think they did. Okay.
That's right. Sheva yes. Levi. We need like a hand signal.
I think they have one, but we're not supposed to do it.
Oh.
They're like, oh yeah, it's a Kohen. No, it's being a Levi on Simple Star is like having TSA pre-check. Your question, I don't have this is the weirdest thing we do. Shlissel challah, certainly very strange.
That is a weird one.
I think I get annoyed when people get too into skulas, when they're like, you better say this, you know, it's the whole thing of like, you better say Parshas Aman on this Tuesday of Parshas Peshach, and you're like, you know, you're supposed to be working on the hour, like you're taking away from, you know, that's why I think I said after that, I said, everybody's in-laws is sending them Parshas Yisro during that one. But yeah, right. I don't have a one thing. I think
if you listen to your routine, it's like all of the things that you make fun of are the weird stuff.
Yeah, but I'm also doing it being like, guys, this is weird that we do that, right? Like, maybe don't name the code to every shul 613.
Oh, but they try to trick you when they have the 2 and the 4 together. Like, there's no 613 here.
You were the one that told me that. I was like, what? That's why it's 2-4?
Did you not know that before I told you? That's amazing. It's 2 and 4 together, 1-3. That's like every shul.
Honestly, the best impromptu joke that I thought was when I was in St. Louis for Shabbos of the Youngest of St. Louis. One of the best shows I've ever done. And it was one of the best letters of recommendation. Because I need these, like, hechshers from shuls, because otherwise people had, we comedian, I don't know, you know, we had a musician once and no more music anymore. So so when I was at that shul, that there's one of those shuls where they don't just have like letters of like Aleph Gimel Dalet Hey as the code, they give you like trivia and you're supposed to, and that's gonna, so now you're standing at sentence is like Avos Luchos, you're like, shoot, how many Avos were there? And it's really and that was the one, the LOKDU was one of them on there. And I just love the idea of like some Catholic guy being like, I'm trying to get in, I'm trying to press the key, nothing's working. Yeah, that was a fun one. Oh, but well, on that same night, you know, they have a pizza place in St. Louis. And the person told me, they said, oh, the show is going to start late because the pizza's not here yet, whatever. And the way she said it to me is like, I imagine if I told this to somebody who wasn't Jewish, it would be like, the show's not starting yet because the rabbi who makes the pizza holds Rabbeinu Tom. And that right there, I think that was a good thread somebody started of like, what's a line? I think Jack Weininger from Meaningful People did a thing of what's a line that you say that you could, that what's a line that's perfectly normal to Jews out of context, but totally makes sense, doesn't make any sense to non-Jews. So, and then somebody, obviously, because that's what WhatsApp does, is somebody took that list of all people's responses, took off their names, and just condensed it and made it into, hey, look at the original content I did. And I'm like, you know, you're not bringing Mashiach, right? So the one I said was, the day starts at night. Which is a good out of context. So like, what the heck does that mean? You know what that means, or I didn't wash yet.
That was a great thread. I submitted one to that like way too late, like after it died down. I don't remember what it was. But yeah, you're right. That if you go back, I'm gonna see if I can find that thread and find what I added to that, because I remember that being like, just every time somebody put in a new thing, it was like, oh, that's phenomenal.
That is, yeah, some of them were good. And then again, this is where there's a little bit of an oversaturation, like where people are just like, oh man, it's now almost time for chakras. And they're like, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. All right. We're almost out of time, but I want to give you a chance. Where can people find you? How can people book you? Is there anywhere that you're going to be performing that people could just like show up instead of having to book through their shul?
Thankfully not. I'm performing at a lot of private events, so it's like, can I come? I was like, I don't know. Well, when are you planning on releasing this?
Well, we are recording this on Thursday night, the 10th. Purim is next week. We're going to be releasing this before Purim.
Before Purim. Okay. Yeah. So on Purim night at Stand Up New York on the west, on the Upper West Side, I'll be performing there.
Is there going to be a Megillah reading and then a breakfast and then?
This is Thursday night, the 17th.
So just said the day starts at night. And fair. Then.
So Purim night, I don't know, it's 7 o'clock, but the clock is changing on Sunday, and everybody with kids is gonna be like, oh god, I hate, yeah. By the way, the news is like, oh, I hope you enjoy, like last time they're like, I hope you enjoy that last extra hour of sleep. You're like, I hate you. I'm doing that at Stand Up New York on March 17th. I am doing something on March 13th, but you're probably not going to release it by then, on Sunday at the White Shul for this organization called Aim Higher, which is not a dating site. I thought it was, but it's for getting people jobs. But if it was a dating thing, it would be called Aim Lower. that was a joke that somebody gave to me. I was like, I got a rabbi actually gave that to me. And what else? You can find me in general. I do a lot of private events, but I also, you know, do some public ones. My website is ellicomedy.com, because Leibowitz is way too hard to spell. So ELIComedy.com. You can book me there. I'm on Twitter at Ellie Leibowitz, spelled extremely difficultly, at ELIBOWICZ. I'm on Facebook if you're 1,000 like me. And I'm on Instagram, I think Ellie Comedygram, Leapstagram. I don't even remember what that's pretty terrible.
Whatever. Right? We'll link to all these places on our social media.
But you can Google, people, I don't know. How many people listen to this?
Six.
Okay. Well, it's going to be four after. but yeah, this was fun. Always good talking to you. You're a good audience. I gotta run more jokes by you ahead of time.
Yeah, I probably should give you more of a heads up as to what I'm going to ask you.
I mean, it's okay. I can
I'll put you on the spot.
I don't mind. As a comedian, I should be like, hey.
One of the things I was going to ask you is like about how you have like these snappy comebacks and you were expected to. And I didn't ask you that. And I'm glad I didn't, because I required you to give me a snappy comeback.
Well, one of the biggest challenges that I suffer from is doing crowd work. And I got very lucky the first time I ever performed on stage, or the second time, sorry. The first time was at YU at a fundraiser. The second time was at Stand Up New York, where I'm going to be performing next week. But Stand Up New York 13 years ago, 2009, I think, I got up on stage. It was like a fundraiser for Stay Rote. And I thought it was going to be like all Jewish audience. It wasn't. It was like a mixed crowd of Jews and people that aren't Jews. I was the last person to go, and I got up there and I said, oh my God, I'm sure you're sick of us. Another Jewish comedian, I'm sure you're so sick of us. And I asked this woman in the front row, this woman the whole night, she wasn't smiling. And I called this woman in the front row. I was like, hey, so where are you from? She says, Germany. And I was like, okay then. And I got 10 seconds of laughter after that, which was great, because if she said Iowa, I don't have a response. But she said the best thing, if she would have said Ramallah or Germany, like it was and my reaction was just so genuinely surprised. And now that she's, now I would have been like, oh, you're from Germany. I was like, oh, this makes sense that you didn't laugh. Like that would have been, how I would have said it now. But yeah, crowd work is something that I always want to work on. So yeah, by all means, always throw stuff my way, and always have the fun to have a nice audio Shabbos meal with you.
All right. Eli Leibowitz, thank you so much for joining me, and good luck.
Thank you very much, Izzo. Have a good one. Happy Purim.
Happy Purim, everybody. My thanks to Eli Leibowitz for joining me this week. If you're interested in continuing the laughter, check out Eli's first appearance on the show, episode 8, Kosher Comedy Part 1, or episode 9, Kosher Comedy Part 2 with Talia Reese. We wish all of you a Freilichem Purim, and until next time, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.
Hit record. The last time I was with you, we did it live in front of each other. I was in your apartment. It's the same apartment, isn't it?
I think it might be. Did I let you in that time?
Are you in Riverdale?
I'm still in Riverdale.
Riverdale. All right. Yeah, same apartment. It doesn't look the same because I think you're in. Is that your wife? I can see in the background.
No, it's a Shaytel head.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really, you're gonna have fun with figuring out which ones of these you're gonna put at the end of the episode.
The jokes are very real. People ask me, like, are you really married? I said, yeah. Like at the end of a show, people are like, are you really married? I was like, you think I could talk to you about the horrors of a shaytel head?
All right, let's do this. Let's introduce yourself. Hi, I'm so and so, and I am so and so.
Was this an AA meeting?
It is. Surprise.
I'm Eli Leibowitz.
Nah, do it again. I was talking over you.
All right. Hi, I'm Eli Leibowitz. I also interrupt people. I'm Eli Leibowitz, and I am a comedian that performs at Jewish events. I have to add that because I literally, when I perform at, like, let's say comedy clubs like Stand Up New York, I perform at a bunch in the city, and New York City, I should say. I guess I shouldn't just assume everyone lives in New York and New Jersey. But when I perform on the Upper West Side of New York at like clubs, there are comedians who have, like, I would say real credits, who are like, this guy Joe DeVito has been on Late Night with Stephen Colbert and Conan and whatever. And I go up and it's like, and Eli Leibowitz, you've seen him at the Young Israel West Hempstead. I gotta emphasize that I'm
all right. Man.